This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 191 for Wednesday, May 11th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight for the first time, Mr. Brian Ibbett of Coverville, The Morning Stream, a bunch of other podcasts that you probably know, and Soundography coming soon. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, Joel. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, my friend. I'm excited. It's been a long time since we've been on a show together. I feel like it might have been Current Geek or something.
Current Geek is what I'm thinking it was. Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
And prior to that, it's just been, you know, meeting up at Nerdtacular and playing Cards Against Humanity and
right. It's something about Cards Against Humanity that will bring people together or turn them red faced, at least. Because I remember, I think that was the first time we were ever socializing. We'd done the whole hobnobby, you know, networky thing at the convention, but at the hotel playing Cards Against Humanity was the first time we actually had a chance to hang out. And but something that's kind of come out of that, though, which I find really cool, and I sometimes have to pinch myself, is that traditionally there's, over the course of the Nerdtacular weekend, because I mean, everybody's trying to see everybody.
Sure.
But at some point, I've always sat down for dinner with you.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like at one point or another, a lot of times it's like the day after Nerdtacular is over and there's some stragglers kicking around.
That's right.
So you get that low key, because you're the MC of the thing a lot of the time. So you're super busy.
Well, secondary MC, MC backup, which is right. Also my DJ name.
Yeah. Scott's not here. We can.
Okay. Yeah. Then it's me. It's all me.
Yeah.
No, it is funny. And you're a great dinner companion. So it's not like I seek it out, but I certainly don't complain about it when it happens. So, we need to keep making sure that happens.
I agree. No, I think that's a good tradition to uphold, especially because I like food. So I'm a quiet dinner companion. If anybody out there can believe it, I like to eat so much that I get very quiet when I'm out for dinner.
Oh, really? Yeah. I can hardly hear anybody over my own eating. So.
And there isn't a Nerdtacular this year, so we're going to have to skip on that for...
That's right. Yeah, we're taking a year off, but looking forward to getting back into it in 2017 and letting Scott catch up with the myriad of other projects that he's got. It's funny. He talks about, you know, all the projects that he's got that he's trying to keep up with. Because of this year off, I thought, well, now it'll be a perfect opportunity to roll out this new show, Soundography, that we were talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Do a couple more CDs, the Andrew Allen stuff, and then another one that's going to be in Vegas later this year. And for a year that doesn't have a Nerdtacular, I feel like I've got all the stresses and preparation and things that have to be done as much as if there were a Nerdtacular. So it ain't a year off as much as it should be. It isn't.
Yeah, I hear you. I did the same thing. You know, like I've been doing the freelancing thing. I've coming up on, you know, I don't have any travel plans for conventions this year. It's all local drivable stuff, mm-hmm. even down into September. And then I went ahead and started a publishing company. And so that's a lot of work.
Well, awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I
can imagine.
I mean, I'm enjoying it, of course. It's been in the works for a long time. But like you said, it's like someone opens this door and like, hey, you could actually have some free time this summer. And you're just like, nope. I don't want free time.
But I don't. Yeah.
Who wants that?
Right.
You know, right. I was actually talking with my friend Mike today. He's been on the show before. And he just finished his first year in pharmacy at university. And he's in between, like school has ended, but he's looking for that, you know, placement pharmacy job for the summer. So he's bored out of his gourd because he's been basically running like a bat out of hell studying for like 9 months. And now he's down to like, well, you've got nothing to do, you know?
Right.
And, you know, idle hands are a problem, I think, for a lot of people these days.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you feel like you've got nothing to do, it's so impossible to not say, oh, well, then I'm going to start another podcast, or I'm going to develop this, or I'm going to start producing this. And it's free time feels like, lately, feels like wasted time. And it feels like a bad word to say free time these days.
Yeah, I mean, and as a an entrepreneur or anybody that's self-employed, I mean, if you've got free time, you feel like you're doing something wrong.
Right, exactly.
And it's too bad because I've read a number of articles recently about like, hey, like you can't just work all the time. You're going to burn yourself out.
Yeah.
So I one of the things I've been trying to take advantage of, especially since it's starting to, knock on wood, spring has arrived in Canada. There's no more snow.
Nice.
Yeah. So I went out for a hike the other day in the city. I don't have a car, so I don't leave the city very much. But in Dartmouth, where I live, there's a number of lakes that are all chained together and a park that kind of meanders between a couple of them. And it's on the way to the movie theater. So rather than get on a bus for, 30 minutes and kind of try to juke and jive and figure out when that all happens, it's about an hour and 15 minutes walk, through a park, around a lake to the movie theater. So that's what I did yesterday. I took my sister to go see Captain America Civil War, but I took this hike in between. And, it's a beautiful sunny day and you think, it's kind of a cheap matinee special at the movie theater today. I really want to go see Civil War, but it's beautiful and sunny. I should probably, I should probably go outside. Well, I say, why not do both?
Oh yeah. You took total advantage of it. And an hour and a half in walking through a park and around a lake beats 10 minutes in a car or in a bus or whatever. I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and you did it right.
Yeah, and I felt fantastic last night. Like fresh air. I was tired. I wasn't stressed out. So mm-hmm. I think my rule this summer might be if I'm going to the movie theater, maybe I'll walk.
Sure. Just because also makes it easier to justify getting popcorn, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. For me, it was peanut M&Ms.
There you go.
But yeah. Exactly. No. The giant bag of M&Ms that my father brought back for me from the States specifically for the movies. It weighs like a kilogram and a half or something stupid. It's one of those Costco monsters.
Oh right.
Like,
oh yeah.
I think he bought it more because it's funny. I mean, he knows I like them, but it's more of this he puts it on the table and it's like someone dropping a weapon. It's like,
you will here's never your birthday run present out of M&Ms.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You are now armed for the summer. And you've seen Civil War as well.
I have. We saw it on Friday night.
Yep. Nice. So like opening night, sort of?
Yes. Opening night. And we got, it's funny, we pre-bought our tickets. We don't live in one of those fancy places where you've got the reserved seating on all your theaters. There's a couple theaters here in town that have it, but the theater we were going to didn't. And our party of four actually had to split up into two parties of two. But it worked out perfectly because Tina, she goes and sees like a trooper every Marvel movie, every Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, Star Trek, Star Wars, everything with me. And she got to sit next to my aunt, which is who she'd probably want to sit next to be able to kind of be on the same level with. And then I sat next to my uncle, who was the big comic book guy that got me interested in comic books for my whole life. So
fun.
If we couldn't sit together, then at least we sat in the right pairs, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. Now, before we get into the movie, I want to let everybody know that we're going to go spoiler free. So if you're listening to this and you're concerned, I mean, the movie just came out. So Brian and I are not going to share anything that would ruin your experience. But I'm curious.
Can't talk about the big dance number right in the middle, huh?
No, too late.
When they all break into song. Darn it.
Cha-cha-cha. Yeah. No. Oh, my God. That would have been funny. And not too far-fetched.
No.
They could have pulled... If anybody is going to pull something like that off, it's probably Marvel.
That's
but,
right.
But I'm curious, because now that you've kind of dropped the note that your uncle was with you...
Mm-hmm.
How does he feel about, obviously Civil War, but like all of these movies that are realized in special effects and live action and all that kind of stuff that he never would have had, growing up?
No, I mean, we talked about that a lot, as a matter of fact, like talking about, he's 10 years older than me. So he's, he's a decent age. He's far enough in age where he experienced a lot of these things like, I remember seeing the first appearance of Wolverine sitting on the comic rack and I should have picked it up and I picked up a copy of such and such instead or whatever. But we talked a lot about that, about how the 1975 us, sitting there watching stuff like, the Spider-Man TV show that was on in the 70s with Nicholas Hammond and the Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby, how our minds just would have been blown to see something like we saw on the screen with not just Civil War, but any of these MCU movies.
Yeah.
And it's, man, it is a great time to be a comic book fan with that nostalgia and having that love for these characters that not only are you finally seeing on the big screen, but you're seeing them the way they should be seen on the big screen. You're seeing characters that are very true to the source material, which we did not have for the long time. They changed Bruce Banner's name. They gave Spider-Man silver goggles and suction cups on his hands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But actually getting to see these characters very authentic to the comics is it's such a great time to be a comic fan.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I didn't read as many traditional Marvel and DC comics growing up. I was more of an Image kid.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone ever does like Stormwatch or Cyberforce, like I'm in.
Gen 13 or
yes, Gen 13 would be awesome.
Would be perfect ensemble film, and they could totally pull something like that off.
Yeah, exactly.
Was Danger Girl? Was that Image or was that okay?
That was Image.
Another great one.
Yeah, Danger Girl, Savage Dragon. Spawn started off as an Image comic.
Of course, yeah.
But yeah, like I think that for me it's just the level of excitement now because Marvel has earned my trust. Mm-hmm. You know, like someone says, you know, Civil War is coming out, I'm just like, I'm in. Decision made. Unless people I trust, that you know, podcasters and people that are nerdy like me, come on and say, It wasn't very good. You might want to wait, and for home video or something like that. Then that would be the only thing that may, and it probably wouldn't, that may stay my hand.
Sure.
I have the reverse now for the DC films. I will stay home, and wait until one of my nerdy friends rages about how good it was before I go see. Like I've got high hopes for Wonder Woman, but anything that Zack Snyder's involved with, whether he is on that or not, I don't know. But
I am out
until someone says like they fired him or they've changed the mood or like something is different.
They've overruled him or something. Yeah. Suicide Squad. I'm still holding out hope for just because it feels like such a different style of DC movie.
I agree.
But one of the things that I noticed, and again, this won't be spoilery, is how Marvel seems to understand the characters beyond the powers. When you strip away Captain America's strength and you strip away Scarlet Witch's powers and things like that, you're still left with very interesting and very compelling characters. And I felt like with the DC stuff, just with Batman versus Superman specifically, that the characters were all about their powers. When you strip away Superman's powers, you're really not left with much.
No.
Except for a love of his mother, apparently. And kind of the same thing with Batman. But there weren't, even stripping those away and saying, okay, well, how does what's left compare to the comics? It felt like very different things. And a couple nights ago, we watched the Fantastic Four film. That's one that I actually did manage. The first Marvel film that I've stayed away from, Marvel-related film, because it wasn't MCU. It wasn't produced by Disney. We stayed away from it and then just watched it on HBO streaming the other night. And they fall to the same kind of problem that the DC movies do, where when you strip away the powers, the characters you're left with are very unbelievable. They're very, not just different from the comics, but different in a way that if that was the character in the comics, I never would have continued reading Fantastic Four kind of thing.
Yep.
So Marvel knows how to do it right, and even with Marvel properties, a lot of these other ones don't seem to know the special sauce yet.
I agree.
The DC and the Fox and the other sides of things.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I feel that something that was reiterated in the film was the number of times that any of the super powered people, the enhanced people or beings, I guess, because the Vision is not really a person, addressed one another. 9 times out of 10, they were using their real first name.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like,
that's a very good point.
Scarlet Witch. What's her name? Wendy?
Wanda,
Steve, Clint, like they just mm-hmm. talk to each other like people, as opposed to calling. I mean, I think the guy that plays the Falcon, I can't remember his name. Not the actor, but the character.
Oh, it's Sam Wilson.
Sam Wilson, yeah. So Sam, mm-hmm. he calls him Cap sometimes.
Right.
But that's kind of like a military buddy thing.
It's a nickname, yes, sure.
He'll call him Steve as well, right? Mm-hmm. Same with Black Widow. No one calls her Black Widow.
Right.
You know, it's always Nat. You
it
know?
Feels and like that would, and that feels like it would just take you right out of the film, right?
Yeah.
Black Widow, set them up and I'll knock them over. You yeah. know, kind of.
It's like every time
use
they
your sting.
Yeah, it's like every time they try to mention Superman in the Supergirl TV show and they have to say my cousin or Superman or that guy, right. the other Kryptonian. It's like, look, if you just called him Clark or Superman, no one would care. You
know, right. Like just right.
Stop drawing more attention to it than you need, you know?
Such a good point.
Yeah, no, I mean that I was on board from the moment that the movie got going. I remember leaning over to my sister and saying, like, this is going to be good. Like the opening sequence yeah. and stuff, I was like, ooh, I'm on board. And I know Andrea had a good time because at one point, and it killed me, Andrea really enjoys Captain America.
Okay.
Probably more so Chris Evans than anything else.
Sure.
But I mean, no, she's a nerd. She's a fan. She likes all this stuff. I've trained her well. But there was a moment when he was, doing something heroic. Again, spoilers.
Sure.
And she held her hands up to the screen in like the double L, like she was framing a photo. And she looked at me like, yes. And I was just like, okay, even I'm having this feeling. So obviously.
I'm guessing it was when, I won't say, but when he was, Steve Rogers was maybe holding on to something.
Yes. And honestly, I think the clip is in the trailer, but I don't want to, it was a lot yeah. longer and a lot yeah. more involved in the
sure.
movie.
Sure.
And it's something, and it was that moment actually that made me realize something that I had been feeling for a while. And that is Captain America in all of the films is the Superman that I've been wanting in film forever. Mm-hmm. Right. Like he's now right. the Boy Scout super guy, you know, and something that I think that makes him so identifiable is the fact that he's got limitations. Like he's not sure. a god. Like he can't fly around and shoot lasers out of his eyes, right? Like, I mean, he can jump. He's got a shield, but he's got power. Like he's got limits. He can get shot.
Sure.
You know, and I think that that's something that really grounds him, and again draws a larger kind of disparity between what's happening, you know, in DC and what's happening in Marvel. And with DC, like even their villains are like aliens and alien mutants and alien clones and on, and it goes on and on. And in, you know, in this, it's not that. And again, I have to dial myself back, but like it's such a grounded story.
Yeah.
It, you know, and it's such a good story. And it was 2.5 hours. I didn't believe it. Like I came out of there going, oh my gosh, like
right.
my whole afternoon is gone, you know? But yeah, I was thrilled. I mean, we all know that Spider-Man was going to be in it. I thought that was epic. I really enjoyed the way that they handled Spider-Man. I'm really looking forward to not like it's nice to see what they've done. And at some point you have to look ahead at the Marvel universe and say, whoo, I wonder what they've got left. But like, actually right. I've got a lot.
Oh yeah. Captain Marvel's coming, Inhumans, another yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Is there a Black Panther one coming?
There is a Black Panther one as well. Yeah.
I would watch him in a movie for sure.
And even the Sony Spider-Man, the fact that Marvel has done this great job of saying, okay, we're planting the flag. We're establishing this character as it is right here in Civil War. And now you guys can run with that, but know that we've put up some walls. We put up a foundation that you need to adhere to. Mm. And I think that's the way Marvel can really be successful and actually even help make other studios successful. If they were able to do the same thing with the X-Men films, mm-hmm. I think that that Fox would be seeing the same kinds of successes as Marvel is with their films. Yeah. Just the fact they're saying, okay, you know, let's look at the source material. These things are things that need to be updated, sure, but again, you need to be somewhat true to the way these characters have been established, because they've been established to be what they are over decades. And there's a reason that they endure and a reason that they're popular and a reason that people pick up every issue of X-Men, which spans over like 12 different titles sometimes. It's because these characters are well written, well thought out. And when if you use that as your base foundation for the character, you're going to be great and you're going to be successful. And if Fox gets that, then they'll be way, we'll see some great X-Men films coming soon.
Yeah. And I like the casting of Apocalypse.
Oh yeah. Oscar Isaac.
Yeah. Well, Oscar Isaac. And actually I'm not so sure how he's going to be as a villain, but that's, mm-hmm. that's me seeing Poe Dameron.
Sure.
Right.
You need to see Ex Machina to see maybe a slightly darker side of Oscar Isaac.
You know, I've seen it actually. I love that film.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No. So yeah, I mean, I believe that he can be, you know, have that different side to him.
Maybe not quite as maniacal as he's going to be.
Yeah. 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 I feel like a lot of times something that Marvel often gets right and no one else seems to be able to get, although I don't really mind. I mean, the Superman suit and stuff in DC, it's fine. It does what it needs to. And actually the new Batman suit was fine too, but the costuming for Apocalypse specifically, having looked at the comic character and then looked at what they've got going on screen, you're like, really? That's mm-hmm. kind of how you went? Like, I feel like I can appreciate the need to maybe have a real actor on screen, but at the same time, I also don't want them to do that, and they probably won't do that with Thanos in the eventual Marvel movies. Because
he should not be, right, he should not be, Grodin, right?
Yes.
Josh Brolin. Okay, yeah. It is Brolin. Yeah, we don't need Josh Brolin just walking around with a cape and and prosthetics. It needs to be, he needs to be as CGI as Hulk is, basically.
Yeah, and I'm okay with it looking a little bit like Brolin, like just how Hulk looks a little bit like Ruffalo, right?
Right, totally.
Yeah, no, I think that the way that they handled the departure kind of like at the end of Civil War really kind of has me interested in as to how, you know, they handle the next Avengers film or films, I guess, because there's two of them. And I'm just so excited that Spider-Man is potential.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know, but potentially that Spider-Man could be in the Avengers movies as well.
Right.
Like it's because he's there, he's available. Like, I think it's great. I'm wondering why with all the money behind Disney that they haven't attempted to buy, you know, the rights for X-Men or mm-hmm. or what's the other title? Spider-Man.
Fantastic Four, Spider-Man.
Four. I'm surprised, like, especially Fantastic Four, because that probably isn't too expensive.
Like, I think they'll be able to get that. Basically, if a studio doesn't make a film within a certain number of years that maintains their license to that property, then it becomes available to sell off. And I don't think there's going to be a Fantastic Four 2.
No, probably not. We're probably all best for that.
Right.
Although I find it hard to remember sometimes that Captain America was the Human Torch in the original Fantastic
Chris Evans?
Four.
Yeah.
Chris Evans, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so such a much better role for him as Captain America.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I don't know what it is about it, because he seems like he could be the flying by the seat of your pants kind of playboy kind of guy that he was in as Human Torch. But seeing him as the Boy Scout, like you say, the ultimate Boy Scout, Captain America, it seems so much more believable.
Yeah, no, yeah. I agree. And it's one of those things where, like, this, the stuff that's coming out of his mouth, like, you absolutely know that he believes it.
Right.
You know,
right.
And the casting in Civil War was fantastic, including the new people that we get to see. I thought that was really good.
Yeah. How amazing is it that Marvel, you know, that they're able to do a 2.5-hour film with 12 superheroes? And you don't feel like any of them really got short shrifted, right? Like, you know, not just the each of the characters gets a great amount of screen time, but you also know each of their personal stakes in the ultimate battle that's going on. You know, each of them has their own kind of side story, their side arc. There's the whole, well, there's stuff going on with
yeah
multiple characters.
Yeah,
almost caught myself there.
Yeah,
but there's a great support that is given to all 12 characters, even though it's a Captain America film, even though it's really a Captain America, Bucky, Iron Man film.
Yeah, and not every character needs to have a timeout or some overly long dialogue to explain who they are, where they came from, how they got their powers. I mean, like, anybody that's not really into comics would be like, who the hell's this guy? Mm-hmm. And at some point in the dialogue, they address that. Like, Marvel is aware that they're throwing 12 superheroes on the screen at the same time. And there's a certain amount of seriousness when it's in its when it's needed, and there's a certain amount of joking when when something happens, and like everybody is just like, "Whoa, what?" And because because the audience is having the same reaction, and then the characters in the movie are like, "What the hell just happened?" Like it's handled so maturely from a storytelling point of view. I think that's really what gets me when it comes to this kind of stuff, because you know, like it's. The characters, as you mentioned earlier on, the characters in the films without their powers, they react like people. They don't react because the script says, go here now. Mm-hmm. Like it feels very natural for everybody. And I think they've managed to marry, the ensemble of characters really, really well. So yeah, if for anybody out there that has not seen Captain America Civil War, don't miss it in theater. It was an absolute ride. I mean, we're talking about all this character development. It was a wicked action movie too.
Oh yeah, for sure. And plenty of humor too. Like, a great amount of humor, great amount of action, great amount of, it's a thriller. It's a action piece. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you go, pay attention to everything that comes out of Spider-Man's mouth.
Everything. Right, for sure. Yes.
My sister and I were just doubled over in the seats listening to some of the stuff. It was fantastic. Well, this is a good point, I guess, to spring forward into our spoiler section for Game of Thrones Season 6. This is going to be Episode 3, Oathbreaker, just aired this past Sunday on HBO. If you have not seen that episode, folks, then this is the time to kind of say goodbye, because Brian and I are going to go over all kinds of gory details. And pardon the pun, because it is Game of Thrones. But just to kind of set things up, the plot summary for this week was that Jon Snow reveals himself to the Wildlings and executes Alistair Thorne, Ollie, and the other officers involved in his assassination for treason. He leaves Castle Black, leaving Ed in charge of the Night's Watch. On a boat on their way to Old Town, Sam states his intent to leave Gilly and her baby with his family at Horn Hill while he trains to be a maester. In a vision, Bran, Freudian slip. Can you see the future, Brian?
I can. I can see that there are way too many characters that are Bran, Braun, and Brone in this film, TV show.
No kidding, right? Not to mention they switch characters' names all the time. It drives me nuts.
That's right, yes.
Bran sees his father and Lord Howland Reed kill Sir Arthur Dayne at the Tower of Joy in Dorne. In Vase Dothrak, Daenerys is brought before the Dosh Kaleen. Varys discovers the masters of Astapor, Yunkai, and Volantis have been financing the Sons of the Harpy. In King's Landing, Tommen converses with the High Sparrow while Jaime and Cersei interrupt a small council meeting. Arya trains rigorously with the Waif, and her sight is returned to her when she has accepted herself as no one. And finally, Lord Umber asks Ramsay for help in protecting the North from the Wildlings, bringing Rickon Stark and Osha as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it gets confusing, because this is the name thing. So Osha is very close to Asha.
Right.
And
yeah.
Asha in the books was the name of the Theon Greyjoy's sister. And that's not her name in the show.
No, but there was another character named Asha. Wasn't there the, who am I thinking of? Wasn't Robb Stark's betrothed?
Oh, and she had a funny name too. You're right.
Right.
And that was different than the books.
Right, right.
Yeah, like they were all really similar. And
they are
confusing.
Yes.
Especially as someone that I did like an audiobook read through. So when I come to Game of Thrones, I remember the books, but then I'm having to remember who got swapped for who and what story gets switched around and all this kind of stuff. I mean, a lot of the decisions that have been made are good. I mean, one of the places that we actually didn't see anything from this week was the Sansa, Brienne and Pod story, which I miss because I'm finding that getting very interesting. And it's good because in the books, both Brienne and Sansa in the books were pretty boring. So flipping their stories around and bringing them together early and all this kind of stuff that's happening in the TV show is way more interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to see where that goes, but we didn't get any touch on
there.
That,
we just have to assume that they're still making their way up to, are they going, they're not going to Winterfell now that they know that, they're going to Castle Black because they were just in, or she was just in Winterfell.
Yeah. So they're going to get there and right. John's not going to be there.
Right. Exactly. Hope he left a message for her.
Yeah. Yeah. On the whiteboard right outside the watch. You know,
that's just, right. Yes.
Gone fishing. See you soon. It's funny. The title of this episode kind of set me down a different path mentally. I thought we were going to get more Brienne and Sansa because her sword is called Oath Keeper and the title of the episode is called Oath Breaker.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But of course I come to realize that it was Jon that they were focusing on breaking his oath to the Night's Watch. So where do you think Jon's off to?
I would assume on his way maybe to Winterfell to maybe try and get control away from Ramsay. Although going and doing it alone without having the wildlings, which is kind of what Ramsay's expecting, right? I mean, he's expecting that now that Jon has this army of wildlings along with the other members of the Night's Watch, that he could use them to take Winterfell back. Mm-hmm. There's even kind of allusion to that with Ramsay and I have to scroll back up here. Lord Umber.
Umber, yeah.
Yeah. So who knows? I mean, I can't imagine him trying to do it on his own. So I don't know if it's just him saying, hey, I just need to get out of here for a little while. I mean, we're seeing a new darker Jon Snow now that he's come back, and we don't know what the full ramifications are of his return. I can't imagine that it's just going to be right back onto the same track that he was on. Something has to change pretty harshly in your mind once you're brought back from the dead.
Yeah, well, and I was expecting him to be harsher. I mean,
sure,
I would have been angrier. I would have been stabbing Thorne a few times and watching him bleed for a bit before I cut the rope to the gallows.
Right.
I appreciated the long pause with John and Ollie, I think is the kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, like, it wasn't a gory episode, but Game of Thrones never ceases to disappoint as, you know, making you feel uncomfortable when you're watching what is essentially like a 14 or 15 year old kid hanging from a rope.
It's funny because this is the same kid that stabbed Jon Snow at the end of last season yet. And probably was the most vicious about it. Like the most, harsh about the stabbing, and even still seeing him hung, it's like, oh yeah, that's rough business.
Yeah. I think if the story that I recall is correct, Ollie's parents died at the hands of wildlings.
Okay.
So I think that's why he's so pissed off at John.
Gotcha.
I think that's where that comes from. All the stuff at the north, I wasn't surprised until he left when he gave up the watch. Cause I did not see that coming. I'm hoping that Ghost goes with him.
Last remaining, direwolves.
Yeah.
Right?
Cause we got Shaggy Dog's head got brought in on a hook.
Yeah. Rickon's,
so we're down to two that we see on a regular basis. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause some are still alive.
Brands is right. Yeah, yeah, we've lost Sansa's, we've lost Arya's.
Yeah, Sansa's died because he was Stark had to kill her, and then Nymeria, Arya's wolf, ran away, but we've not seen her since.
Oh, really? Okay. For some reason, I thought that
No, Arya throws rocks at her until she leaves.
That's right. She doesn't want her to die. Yes. So it was Robb Stark's that we see get killed the same episode that we see Robb Stark get
killed.
But,
they put his head on a stick with the wolf, I think.
Right. Yes.
Or vice versa, they put the wolf's head on his body.
That's right.
Something like that. Yeah. And then of course, Ghost is still around. So yeah, there's three alive that we know of, but then only two that we've seen on a kind of a semi-regular basis.
Right.
And I'm all for more of them because I like seeing them as much as I like seeing the dragons, especially if they're not inside, like if they're outside somewhere where you can get some perspective and realize that they're the size of like small elephants.
Exactly.
I enjoy that fantasy element of it.
For sure.
Well, we didn't get to see any dragons with Daenerys or in... Astapor or anything like that.
No.
But I don't know. I'm not really satisfied with what's going on with Daenerys right now. I mean, how do you feel about
going
it?
Going to the widow's home for ex.
Yeah, I just feel like every time they cut to Daenerys, it's like this long speech about who I am and what I've done, and then the response from everybody else is always the same. We don't care. It doesn't matter. You know,
exactly. And we got that with the call last week. We got that with the other widows this week, and it always seems to be, you know, the show of force with her dragons to say, no, look here, see, I have dragons and now you got to listen to me and who I am. And hopefully we're building to that because it is a cycle that we do seem to see with her a lot. So something needs to kind of break that cycle. Plus nothing good can come from her being in the, among all the other widows.
No, I agree. And
especially since she looks so different, and they make note of how different she looks from all of them.
Yeah. And I think too that, you know, if there was something about, I thought when she was walking, when one of the widows, the head widow there, was walking towards her with a torch, I thought they were going to try and like brand her or something. I was thinking like, I hope they try that because that's not going to get very far.
Right.
You know, because the whole Targaryen thing. So I'm curious to see if she can somehow win over, you know, the Dothraki, because then add, you know, even more people to the horde that's slowly
the army that's following
that her. Was following her. I guess they're kind of scattered right now.
Yeah,
but yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, the kid in me just wants Drogon to sweep in and save the day. Maybe eat a couple of people that you don't like. But right. I don't know. I understand that like there's what should happen, and then there's TV budgets, and you're kind of right. Hamstringed by that, because I can't remember where I saw it, but it was I think it was a video on Facebook, and they were talking about like the designing and modeling and execution and then comping of the dragons into just a single scene. I think it was the one from last week with Tyrion, with Viserion and I can't remember the other dragon's name, Rhaegal.
Okay.
So, yeah, and the amount of work that goes into this thing where the dragons are doing not a whole lot, just head bobbing, you know, some twitching and
breathing, growl,
you know, eyes are moving around. But like the amount of work that goes into that is just stupendous. So to, you know, throw into something like an action scene where a dragon is actually breathing fire and eating people, I can only imagine.
Oh, totally. I mean, there's just the scene, like you said, with Tyrion last week. There's you don't have any doubt, you know, if you sit there and you think about it, you're like, all right, Peter Dinklage is in a room where he's trying to act with a green screen, and there's probably a couple guys there with mocap suits just so he's got somebody kind of to look at and talk to. But the fact that when you're watching it, you're not thinking, oh yeah, no, Tyrion's in this room with these dragons. You know, they're right there with them, and there's danger there and that sort of thing. That speaks to how well they do that special effect. It is amazing. And so we never see the other two dragons kind of escape that chamber. I assume that there's the second door that they used to go out and burn goats.
I guess. I don't know if there's another door or if they're just, I mean, they're still small enough. I think they could get through that door if they wanted to, or they could just burn the stone to the point where they can get out, I guess.
Right. Right.
I don't recall how she got them in there. And I feel like they were smaller when she did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how or if they get out. Again, I love all these questions that I have, because now in so many of the stories in the TV show, we're beyond the books. Did you read the books, Brian?
I read the first one, and I have the second one on my Kindle, and I do want to get to it at some point, but there's a bunch of things that I'm reading before I get to
it. I mean, I was lucky enough, and especially with my line of work, like I can sit and draw and listen to an audiobook, and it's usually, it's great. So I can get through quite a bit if I'm really into something. But something that I really enjoy is that of course, in a lot of the stories, they've moved beyond where I have read. Like they're into uncharted territory for John and Brienne and, even Arya, I don't remember so well. So like stuff like that has been really, really cool. This week, it was a joke last week on the show, but this week we got more waif in the stick. I was talking to Hammond earlier and he said the only thing that we were missing from those scenes was the Rocky theme.
Right. having her blindly run up to the top of the steps and then put her arms in the air and say, no one.
Just screaming into nothing, just into the fog. I'm no one. Yeah. I can appreciate that there had to be some sort of penance going on, but like I kind of felt like it was really repetitive. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm wondering if they could have spent, like, she was doing something really interesting with mixing potions by smell, you know, and doing all that kind of stuff. And you could have spent longer on that so that I really understood maybe the gravity of that situation. Maybe if she did it wrong, she died or got sick or, you know, like, all, or maybe I was waiting for one of them to blow up. Right, like if she mixes the wrong powder together, right, and then
that was the point. Yeah, I think it's like they needed to be for those of us with sight, some sort of like skull and crossbones on one, and flowers or something on the other.
Yeah, exactly. Or she needed to, like, you know, sniff one and sneer and be like, "Oh God, that's like sulfur or something."
Exactly.
And, you know, and I feel like they could have spent a little bit more time there. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious to see where it goes now that she's got her sight back.
Yeah.
Because she's going to be back to doing...
I'll be honest, it was a lot quicker than I thought. I thought they were going to drag that out for the whole season. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she was only blind for like 3 episodes really surprised me.
Yeah. I agree. I'm glad they didn't go the whole, like, a lot longer, though, because then you just would have been like basically Daredevil in Bravo.
Sure, right. Yeah, that's right.
You know, like it's funny when you get into, you know, all the stuff that's happening right now, pop culture and social media and movies and comics and so much sci-fi and fantasy happening everywhere, whether it's original Netflix or movies and stuff. And there's so much overlap.
So many parallels.
When
right.
you break things down, it's kind of ridiculous. But I know one thing that I have not seen as much in other stuff as I have in Game of Thrones lately, though, is all the stuff with the High Sparrow, like the religion kind of poking in there. The High Sparrow makes my skin crawl.
Oh, but Jonathan Pryce is so good at being horrible. this like, you know, simple little man, simple old man, but carrying so much power and having so much weight behind what he's saying.
Oh, yeah. And just so one track, like scary.
Yes.
You know, minded. Like, you just like, oh man, this guy does not deviate.
Unmoving. Yeah.
He does not flex. He does not bend. And he doesn't necessarily hold himself higher than anybody, which makes, I think, him more dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, like, cause you're just like, well, if he doesn't hold himself higher than anybody, then you know he doesn't hold you any higher than anybody else. You know, like he puts everybody on an evil and even playing field. It's like, you are all bad. You all deserve the bad things coming, and I'm just here to make sure it happens eventually. And he definitely gives me the willies. And I don't like him talking to Tommen. And I understand that Tommen is the bad guy. Like, Tommen is a Lannister, and he's the king, and it's all bad news and all wrong. But I like Tommen.
I mean, he's like of the Lannisters. He's like the likable Lannister.
Yeah.
Well, Jaime too.
And Tyrion. I mean, like, there's.
But
it's
you
funny.
Feel like Tommen can be corrupted. He's young enough to for the High Sparrow to have some influence on, and I think that's the thing that makes him more scary.
Yeah, I mean, last week everybody was like, no, don't listen to Cersei, run, Tommen, run, and then everybody's like, not that way, like, not to the Sparrow. What are you doing?
Right.
Yeah, no, that kind of stuff I found really, really, sort of concerning. I'm invested in these characters, and when I see stuff like that, I get bent out of shape. It kind of makes me squirm in my chair a little bit. But speaking of chairs, like when Cersei mm-hmm. and Jaime come in,
right.
I was hoping for more from those characters, for Cersei especially, because she has been pretty one note the whole series for a lot of time. It's mm-hmm. just like my kids are my life. I'm here to seek power through them and protect them at all costs. It's like the mm-hmm. mother lion sort of thing. And when she walks into this small chamber and just says, "Hey, I'm here to stretch my legs and throw down some authority." And everybody's like, "You don't have any, mm-hmm. Bye."
And just walk out on it.
Yeah. And you're just like, but the last two episodes with Cersei and Jaime, you felt sorry for Cersei. You thought mm-hmm. there might have been some wisdom. You kind of weren't sure where she was going to go next. I enjoyed the conversation that she had with the Maester this week, where she's talking about little birds and little bees and the stuff that Varys used to do. And I would rather see Cersei go conniving and like super spy than go the same
just
old
back
route
to power.
Yeah, just like sitting down and throwing your weight around. I mean, it's essentially mm-hmm. having the same effect that Daenerys is having. It's like you're all talk and you've got nothing to substantiate it.
What she needs is some plums to offer the kids so that she can
Yeah. Or something larger like a pineapple for the mountain. Right. Like, here.
There you go.
Here, Gregor. Yes. This way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, I kind of want to see what he looks like with his mask on.
Right. Oh, of course. Yeah, that's a reveal that we know we're going to get at some point, and can't wait for it.
Yeah, I wonder who he's going to square off against. Like, I mean, maybe Brienne. Like
maybe
end of series kind of, you know, crazy mm-hmm. confrontations, you know, like Vader Skywalker sort of level. I kind of wonder, you know, who's going to be pitted against who.
It's got to be somebody.
Yeah,
somebody who we feel could take him, and I mean, hey, we thought the Viper would be able to, but Prince Oberyn, but a little too much grandstanding.
Yeah, yeah, too much. I wonder if the little, all the little Vipers, I can't remember their name. The sand snakes.
You know, yes,
a bunch of those girls dancing around him could potentially take.
Actually, that would be an impressive, and that would be their avenging the death of Prince Oberyn. So yeah. that would be a really cool scene.
Yeah, I think that would be good, especially if they had like a lot of cool stunt doubles in there to do a lot of like flipping and spinning and kind of play up their advantage of being quick and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he probably wouldn't turn his back on them, that's for sure.
No, but if they surround him, then he's got to have his back to one of them.
I suppose.
And we saw what happened with that last week, too.
Yeah. so gross. Something that I hope they don't do any more of, and I'm picky with my fantasy like this, but when the Mountain walked into the Small Council, Maester Pycelle farted. Like he lets out this little.
It's funny. I didn't catch that. I saw that in your notes, and I kind of almost want to go back.
You have to go back.
And
like, if it's not something that's going to ruin it for you, then go watch it. But for me, it was just like that
took
was
you right out of it.
Stupid. I just, you know, like I can appreciate a little shuffle, a little concerned look, but he really did let out a fear fart when the guy came in. And it was, it
literally scared the crap out of him.
Yeah, it's something that you could maybe get away with if Tyrion had done it on purpose.
Oh, sure.
But not the old guy out of being so scared. Like it seemed like have him spill a drink or fumble with something important like that. That would be a little bit more believable than him breaking wind. And the thing too is that it was such a. It was such a car horn. Like it's not anything believable either. It's just total like.
I can't understand how I missed it. I'm gonna have to go back to watch that.
Yeah. Unless one of my neighbors ripped one at the exact moment, then it's absolutely there.
That's absolutely great.
Well, I think that's all I have to say about the show. I'm happy that the weak start to this season has kind of picked up. Definitely curious to see where Jon Snow goes. Daenerys, eventually things with Daenerys will get cool, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But right now it's Jon and Winterfell and Brienne, the North, that I'm really curious about. I mean, where are you looking forward to the show going?
You know, it basically everything you mentioned, but the other scene that I did want to talk about that I thought was great was Tyrion with the Grey Worm and Missandei.
Oh yeah,
and trying to engage them and just trying to get, you know, trying to Tyrionize them basically. Like, mm-hmm. come on, loosen up. Let's play a drinking game. Let's chat. Let's do something. And just the relief on his face when Varys walked in. Okay.
Yeah.
When he walks in, just the relief of like, oh, thank God.
yeah. You took a long time. You left me here with these people for a long time. But that's an example of humor in Game of Thrones being handled well.
Yes. You know? For sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sure. I really enjoy Tyrion and Varys. Anything that they do is usually one of my highlights of the episodes.
And the interaction between Tyrion and Daenerys, that it seemed like it was so brief. We got such a little taste of that at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that this Vaas Dothraki, Widow's Town plotline ends so that she can get back to Meereen and have some more interactions with Tyrion, because I think it's such powerful stuff and fun.
Yeah, it's because they're the two of the most intelligent characters in the story.
Absolutely.
So when they're in the same room, the conversation just ups itself.
Yep.
A bit, exactly. Right? You know, because there's an understanding and a respect there. It's the same. It's kind of the same with, I mean, Sam was always a little bit jittery and fearful, but when he was in his element, when him and John would have a conversation about strategy or something, the level would be brought up a little bit. I'm trying to think about other people that are that same. Well, when he was alive, what's his face there? The head of the Lannister family.
Tywin.
Tywin, yeah.
Yeah.
So whenever Tywin was around, again, the level of intellect in the room was usually to match, you know, or it was on purpose mismatched for good reason. But I always felt that those scenes were really kind of like your ears would perk up, because whatever he was going to say was usually very important. And really brought it.
Love the moments in the show like that. You know, the action's great, but it's those those cool character defining moments where you're thinking, where they're making you think about the ramifications of what they're doing, and mm-hmm. where you see them thinking about, all right, this is the immediate play, but here's kind of the long game. And Tyrion is master of that.
And I think that's what I got so pissed off about with Cersei crashing the small council, is that I love Olenna Tyrell, the old lady. Mm-hmm. And when she's there with the Kevin guy, and I mean, the maesters, take him or leave him, but like, you know, that there's some plotting and some planning going on, and then Cersei comes in, and then the whole conversation just reduces to insulting Cersei. And you're just like, God, like, it just, why couldn't you just stay outside for a little bit longer, Cersei? Because then I could have actually heard something important, you know? Yeah.
Right.
Well, that wraps it up for this week. I'm going to bring us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by tweetaudio.com. You can go there for high-performance noise-reducing earbuds. You can use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweetaudio.com, and TCC is the code at checkout. I've got a quick pick this week, and I kept it on purpose because I know that, Brian, you're into 3D printing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So my friend John recommended this. It's called Glowforge. You can go to glowforge.com and check it out, listeners. It is a 3D laser printer. It seems to be priced around the same size, same kind of price point for desktop extrusion printers, but the level of detail is redonkulous.
Wow. I'm looking at this right now. This is really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the one that I looked at was maybe $2,500. Which, right. I mean, it's a big piece of kit, but if this is something that you're doing for prototyping, or if you're a cosplayer, or if you're a model maker, or doing any kind of thing where you need to manufacture stuff and you need to test, or, I mean, some of the videos, like, there's the part where the camera in the system will identify what's in it, and they put in a laptop, and it knows that it's a certain make and model of laptop, and then instead of cutting through it, it etches.
It's like a laser cutter, laser etcher. This is really cool.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Anyway, John has always been kind of fascinated with this kind of stuff. So when he told me about it on my birthday, I was like, ooh, mental note. And I threw it on my phone. And once I looked at it a couple weeks later, like, man, it was so neat. And if I was into I had the time and the money to kind of have a 3D hobby, this would definitely be something that I would be looking at a lot closer. It almost looks too good to be true. Like, I kind of wonder, looking at the price and looking at what it does, you're kind of like, what's the catch? Like, what am I sacrificing?
And all the different materials, the glass, the plastic, the cardboard that they're using.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's really cool.
No, it looks really, really cool. So there's a video on their website, folks, glowforge.com. There's a big fact, section about different questions that people usually have and all that kind of stuff. So check it out. Did you have a pick this week, Brian?
I did. I just added it in our notes here. So kind of along the same lines, we're going to talk about 3D printing. We're going to talk about some more 3D printing.
Nice.
This is something that I found on Kickstarter. It was recommended to me and I immediately backed it because this is such a cool, cool direction to see the stuff go for 3D printing. And what it is, it's called PolySmooth and Polisher. And it's a combination of filament and a little enclosed box that when you use the two, when you build something with the special filament, with a PolySmooth filament, and then you put it in this little isolation chamber and turn on the gas. sounds mystical. It actually automatically polishes the 3D print down to where it looks like something that you've gotten out of a store. You don't get those little layer lines. You don't get the edges, and you don't get the weird stuff that you get right out of the box with the 3D print. You get something that is smooth, shiny, and looks like it was done in a mold as opposed to done layer by layer. And just looking at some of the things that they've done with this is like, this basically for me takes the 3D printing aspect of something that you could actually give as a gift to somebody without having to do the sanding, the priming, the primer and the filler, the resanding, all that stuff that I do now with a lot of the stuff that I print. This would allow me to like say, all right, taking this out of here, putting it into the polisher, the little gas chamber thing with the acetone. Well, it's not acetone gas. It's kind of,
I think it's alcohol, they said in the video.
It's alcohol, right? So something more harmless. If that were to escape, you don't feel like you've got to quickly crawl on the floor to escape. But I feel like I could, give these out as gifts and actually have a nice looking cool shelf piece that I'd be proud to display. It's not cheap. It's in the $200 to $300 range just for one of these units. But if it's something that you've been looking for, and your big complaint about 3D printing to this point has been, but stuff doesn't, it all looks like the same 3D print with the layers and all that stuff. Then this is probably something to take a look at. So again, it's called PolySmooth and Polisher, and it's what I've been excited about this week.
So with the printers that you have, do you have a resin printer or do you have like an extrusion nozzle?
I have two extrusion printers. One of them was a really early Kickstarter thing that can make something about the size of a pack of cigarettes. And then last year I invested in a BQ Witbox, which is a large format printer, and I can make something that's about almost a foot by a foot.
Oh, wow.
By a foot cube. Yeah, it's one of the largest print areas you can get in a commercial printer. And got a screaming deal on it on Amazon. It was something that looked like it was a mistake. It was about 70% off of the normal price.
Wow.
And jumped on immediately. The price went back up a few days later inexplicably, but I still managed to get it at that price. And
wow, that's awesome.
I love it. It's a great printer. It's a really, really good printer.
So what kind of stuff do you print?
Well, looking at my desk, it's like a bunch of geeky and nerdy things. I've got
cool.
I've got Ant-Man's helmet right over here. I've got a little Dr. Boom statue that still needs to be painted, and a fairly large Doctor Who TARDIS that could actually hold, four bottles of cider if I wanted to put them in there.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't remember where it was a Geek and Sundry article or potentially a another Twitter kind of geeky social media meme, but somebody had made 3D models for D&D characters.
Yes.
And then like 100 of them and then released them for free. to the public.
Just last week. Yeah, these are all downloadable 3D models. I think there were 200 in the batch that reading about. And so my son actually plays a lot of D&D. So I'm going to be the hero of his D&D group when they all start getting back together this summer to play again. Because, you're a mage? Great, let's print up a little mage for you. And you're so-and-so, but... I'm making them paint them. They're going to have to do that part themselves.
and you could potentially polish them depending on if the Kickstarter goes for the polisher. Then you wouldn't have to worry about sanding and all that kind of stuff and these little intricate things. So I think I would like to paint my own. I would have fun.
That's such a fun thing. Yeah, I just did a Hearthstone box recently and had to do all the painting and stuff. And I feel like it came out so well. Even has a little glowy Hearthstone symbol at the very top.
No kidding. Do you put like an LED and stuff in it?
Yeah. It was funny because I was trying to figure out what I was going to do for it. And that week I got an advertisement in the mail for a car dealership. And it was like this, here's your game piece. Bring this to the store and then open it up and it'll glow the number. And if that number matches our number, then you win a new Chrysler or something.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have no intention of, going and taking it to get a new Chrysler. I opened it up and saw that it's a blue LED. So all I had to do is just pull that part out. It's got a little watch battery that I can replace whenever I want.
Nice.
And it just goes right in there. It was almost like serendipity, the perfect timing of getting something like that.
Yeah, found stuff and hacking into stuff like that. It's such a satisfaction between like
totally is.
Like I recently redid a divider in my apartment, and it was this old 70s like panel crisscross divider thing that I tore out, left the frame, and then I grabbed I found a pallet in someone's backyard. I found an old window for $20 at one of the refurb places in town, and for like $25 to $30, I completely transformed this divider in my apartment, and. Like to rip apart this little sales thing and then say, hey, now it's going to be part of this piece of art that I've made.
Yeah.
Like that's just, it's so cool that we're in a point now where there's so many things that you can just push and pull and take from. And then you've got the home capabilities to say like, all right, well, I've got the found pieces I need, but there's some custom bits that I need to make. And now I can like, now we're at a point where you can make the custom bits like on demand.
It's great.
It's crazy. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the point when like this laser thing that they have, like once you can start to do stuff with metal, like once you can really start to do some stuff with some sturdy gear, for both just making things functionally, but also just the level of art, like, sculptors that want to work with metal and things. And rather than dealing with an arc welder, like maybe they can use like a 3D printer or something to kind of, or a laser cutter to cut, like to cut through stuff and have some more precise things going on. Like, I see these guys that have like these metal sculptures in their lawns and they're all moving because they're kinetic and blown by the wind. And they're intricate, but they're intricate based on like what the guy can do with a blowtorch.
He's in his garage with a blowtorch and metal cutters and stuff like that.
Yeah. But then you give somebody like, I see there's an artist, I can't remember her name right now, but I follow her on Instagram, and she's a Disney artist, and she uses like one of those little paper cutters, like one of those, like a paper craft. It looks like a sewing machine, but it cuts paper. And she makes all these beautiful little intricate patterns. So she'll do like, Elsa from Frozen. She'll do Belle from Beauty and the Beast, or she'll make up her own mermaid characters, but like the tail on the mermaid will have all these little spiral designs cut through the paper.
Cool.
But you give someone with that kind of talent and design this home desk laser printer where she doesn't have to do it by hand. She can say, here's the design, cut it out. Like just that kind of stuff. It's just the world that it opens up for artists, like in my mind, is just, it's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, making it so you don't have to have a degree in metal shop to to be able to make your ideas real. Yeah,
precisely. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. This is where we march on out of here. If you'd like to check out the show live, folks, you can come on to thecitadelcafe.com every week at 8 p.m. Eastern. The mobile audio stream is, of course, provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show and tell us what you think about Game of Thrones at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can also find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Big thank you to Old Man Drew in the Canadian iTunes store for the fantastic review. He said, awesome. Why did it take me so long to start listening to this show? Loving it, though. I don't know why it took you so long, but I'm glad you're here. So thanks very much.
Next time, hurry up.
Yeah, exactly. And if anybody out there is listening and wondering why they haven't listened sooner, then, well, you're here. So yay. But if you want to go leave an iTunes review, it's one of the best ways for new listeners to find the show. It kind of bumps us up in the charts there. I'm currently all caught up in reading reviews. So if you leave one, you are pretty much guaranteed for it to be read on the next episode. So yeah, check out the iTunes store. And if you'd like to do something a little bit more, we have a Patreon page. You can go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. You can support the show in any way you like. A penny a show will get you into our Slack chat, which is super fun. It helps me pay for bandwidth and storing episodes and all that kind of stuff. I really appreciate anything that you guys are doing. So patreon.com/thecitadelcafe if you'd like to support the show. And a special shout out to Alistair and Sam in the Slack chat. No particular reason. They're just rocking it. So I thought I'd say hi. Sam is a moderator and Alistair is just kick butt nerd all the time. Whenever I go into the chat and it says that there's 70 new posts, I'm like, oh, it looks like Alistair's been here.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really cool to see that kind of bouncing around. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online, including my illustration and design portfolio at joelduggan.com. And if you'd like to see this other thing that I'm doing, forgepublishing.com is something new. My friend Piper Thibodeau and I are making a book together. It's all about her art. I've started a newsletter, so if you'd like to know more, then just go to forgepublishing.com and sign up. And as we develop the book, as we get closer to the Kickstarter launch, we'll just be sending you more and more information in a very timely manner. We're not going to spam anybody, but we just want to kind of make sure everybody's questions are answered, and maybe even give these newsletter folks a heads up before the Kickstarter goes live in case you want to take advantage of some early bird stuff. And that's it. Follow me on Twitter at Joel Duggan. And Brian, where can the listeners find your plethora of podcasts online?
Well, basically anything with the word Coverville. So if you do Coverville on Twitter, facebook.com/Coverville, of course, Coverville.com. That's where you can find the Coverville show. It's a music show where we focus on cover songs. And then of course, the morning stream where you go to frogpants.com/TMS. It's a show that I do with Scott Johnson 4 days a week, 5 episodes a week. And we talk about the current news, but also have some great guests and great talk about really cool and geeky stuff. And then once you've listened to all that stuff and you're saying, gosh, I wish there was more, you go to soundography.com. Where Hammond Chamberlain and I just funded the show. It's going to be starting up this summer. We're recording an episode this weekend, and we're going to be rolling out episodes week after week for the first season. And I'm really excited to start talking about lesser known bands, the whole history behind them. And we leave you with a great set list, a great playlist to find out about those bands. And that again is going to be soundography.com.
That's great, and I'm super excited for you. And I should have made a bigger deal at the beginning of the show that, I mean, Hammond is a regular on the Citadel Cafe, so the listeners are familiar with him, but you were the other half of Soundography, and he's been talking about it for about a month or so.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, I'm excited for both of you. It sounds like a really cool show.
And I'm excited because you're going to be providing some art for us that I cannot wait to see. I think it's going to be it's going to be such a great representation for the show. So I thank you for that.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm happy to be a part of it. Something I really like about the whole podcasting thing is when I'm, you know, even when I'm not able to be part of a show or partake in something because I don't know enough, like it's not my area, I can usually find a way to provide art or design or something else to kind of support the show.
Right.
I mean, I like music, but I'm not a music file like you guys are. Like I'm not an endless, like Hammond and you are just like this filing cabinet of just knowledge. And I certainly rely on Hammond to bring some new music picks to the Citadel Cafe because I never know.
Sure.
I never know what to pick. But yeah, no, I think it's going to be a really interesting listen. Especially, I love that the playlist idea too. Like it's one thing to listen to people talk about art or to talk about music, but then to actually hear it or see it, like it's a much better way to
I think so too. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, folks, you've been listening to the Citadel Cafe where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.